I always knew he'd come back. In this town, Michael Myers is a myth. He's the boogeyman, a ghost story to scare kids. But this boogeyman is real. An evil like his never stops. It just grows older, darker, more determined. 40 years ago, he came to my home to kill. He killed my friends, and now he's back to finish what he started with me, the one person who's ready to stop him. It's time to cross borders and bring the dude with the biggest fandom from the United Kingdom. Let's get him out from under the stairs and drive him in to the Cut to the Chase lair. You are in for such a Halloween treat as we finally welcome Duncan McLeish. What's
yes.
up, Duncan?
This is surreal. A long time coming, and I'll be honest, it's everything I expected and more.
Aww. Well, I hope you liked your intro there.
It's really good.
You knew it was going to be a softball.
What I was expecting was, I mean, if you can make out every third word he says, that's a good thing. He is Scottish, and he does sound like he has a mouthful of marbles. So I will take that on board. Thank you very much for inviting me on to do this. It's going to be fun. I already know that before we even start talking about the movie.
Yes.
Duncan, you are one of my all-time favorites, as you know, and there may or may not be an Erm counter on the show.
All right, so we'll just get right into it. And so what we've been doing, if you're a first-time guest on our show, we like to ask five finger bang bang questions.
Finger bang bang.
Finger bang bang.
Bang, bang.
questions. So just if our listeners haven't heard you, which I'm pretty sure they fucking have, but I have some questions for you, so we'll get into those. All right, what is the scariest thing that has ever happened to you?
In real life, or like...
Yes.
Yeah, in real life.
What
no, in your alternate life.
It could have been a dream. It could have been, you know, an existential question.
Point.
I mean, in real life, the scariest thing that's ever happened to me is also the best thing that ever happened to me, which was the birth of my daughter. Scariest thing that ever happened, but also the best thing that's ever happened. But yeah, terrifying, because I'm getting on in my years, but my brain still thinks that I'm a teenager. Like, listening to Limp Bizkit and drinking too much. So, you know what I mean? Like, that and child doesn't go together really well. But yeah, terrifying.
I love your post of, like, you showing her movies. Like, I think you were watching Coraline, maybe, was it?
We were just before we hit record on this, we were going back through Paranorman, which she can like recite inside out. She's telling us all, like, this is the bit with the spicy hummus. Such a small detail to know, like, such a random small detail to know. But she's getting there. We'll build her up to, I don't know, Martyrs or, you know.
From Paranorman to Martyrs.
Yeah, give her time. By name, she'll be there.
All right. What is the craziest Halloween you've experienced?
Unlike you guys, like the UK, we're getting there, but we are so not like a. Like, up until recently, but I'll give you facts that'll make you laugh. Up until recently, we didn't like carve out pumpkins or anything like that. Right. Like you guys do, like jack-o'-lanterns. Instead, in Scotland, when I was younger, do you know what a turnip is?
Yes!
Yes. Carve a fucking turnip, which is hard. It's a giant stone. It's like, basically, that's what it is. You like your hands would all be ruined. You know, you'd be swearing a lot. But yeah, that's so. I know it's a strange custom, but I think to be honest with you, like, I remember a Halloween party when I was 22, and I grew up next to like a massive kind of country estate with like a large wooded area, and we would go up there to drink and be out the way and whatnot, and I remember drinking so much that I fell asleep, and I woke up and I did not have a fucking clue where I was or when it was. And this is like, mobile phones were around, but they were like giant bricks, you know what I mean? So like, yeah. I didn't have like GPS or anything like that, and like the woods all looked the same in that particular estate, and it took me about 45 minutes to get on a path, and all that kept playing through my head was Blair Witch, Blair Witch, Blair Witch.
And now we Now we know the origin of Duncan's when he goes live and does his drunken walks home from the pub. It's just so people can find them, yeah.
It's literally, like, I don't know if you've ever noticed, like, but I point out landmarks as I'm passing them.
There's some Dad, I am on Elm Street. Yeah.
I'm kind of that way where, you know, at first it's kind of funny, and then you're like, I know what I'm doing. And then there's that point, it's like that irrational point in your brain where, like, the fear starts to creep in. You're like, what? And you start asking, like, silly things, like, what happens if I never get out of here? I mean, the woods are big, but they're not that big. You know what I mean? If I walk in any direction long enough, I'll get out. But, you know, what happens if I don't get out? You know, what happens if this might be the end of it? Like, just stupid things. And, of course, alcohol is like, it's like pouring fuel on the fire with that. But, yeah, it's probably the scariest one.
Right? Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
All right. The next finger bang bang question is, what is your favorite death scene in a slasher movie?
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Do you know, I'm really old. I'm weirdly old school with this because there's about a million of the most righteous kills ever. But to me, the one that always, like, kind of, how did they do that? You know, kind of effect sort of thing, is Kevin Bacon with the arrow.
Oh, and Friday
the 13th? Yeah, I still to this day, even in the high def copy, you can kind of see, and I know how it's done because it's been explained, but
right.
Like if you don't think about it, I still think that's maybe one of the best practical effects, and because it's just slow and it's gurgly and it's gnarly in all the best possible ways.
Yeah, and you can almost see it pierce through the skin too before it does.
It's so gnarly. It's had he done that quick, I don't think it would be nearly the same level of impact. But the fact it's done slowly, you wince when you watch it. It's a painful, horrible, but simple kill. I mean, of all the ones in that series, maybe the most simplistic. But sometimes simple is better.
I fucking love that answer.
did you get the Scream Factory box set that just came out, Duncan?
Yeah, I did. So Scream Factory don't ship to the UK because... But Amazon do, and Amazon Canada do, and the pound is really strong against the Canadian dollar at the moment, so I got it for a fucking steal. over the moon. It was delivered by Amazon. I'm surprised it didn't come crushed like a can.
Right, like everybody else's.
things came in like weirdly immaculate with all the right discs.
Oh,
like no additional.
It was you.
Yeah, so I'm like, this might be the only one.
That's awesome.
Might be the step of the one that we know was right. But and it arrived. Well, I think I got it before some Americans got theirs. Like, mine's came in on the 15th? I think it was 2 days after its release it came. Like, so, yeah. I've still to watch anything, because as Dan will attest, having been like internet friends with me for quite a while, I buy a lot of movies and then they just sit and shrink wrap.
Right.
Absolutely terrible. But the logical time for them to release that box set would have been next month, with there being a Friday the 13th in November. So that's when I intend to bust out the box set and do the Lord's work and work my way through them. So looking forward to it.
Amen.
All right, next question. What is the most disappointed you've been in a horror film, or what is your most disappointing horror film?
Oh, there's a few of them.
Like one you were like just so excited for, or like it was great and then it just, you know, ended shitty.
It's weird, like I will forgive a movie its last minute, you know, if it does something completely preposterous. Mm-hmm. If everything else up to that point has been like amazing, because I can always say, right, you never quite land that bit, but that's all right. I think it's usually the ones that on paper I should really, really like the ones where like I'm, it's like anything that's remotely put in, like, it's more the art house. I love art house horror movies. I mean, anything with that makes me want to like break out the books, you know, go down an internet rabbit hole, or
yes,
you know, spend like 17 days, you know, questioning my existence on the planet. Those are like those are my favourites. But it's like there are so many times that directors will just use that, well, you know, it's an art house movie, as a way to basically make a movie with nothing in it.
Right.
And I think it's weird. And the thing is, I've 180'd on this movie completely. But Beyond the Black Rainbow, when it first came out, I hated it. And I remember just being bummed out because, like, everyone was like, this is the next big art house horror movie. We, you know, strap yourselves in for, like, you know. And I remember watching it and finishing it and just being like, this, no, nothing happened in this movie. Like, nothing happened in this movie. The soundtrack was amazing. It looked amazing. But nothing happened in it. And then it was maybe, I mean, I was, like, bummed out. And I tried to watch it, like, a time after that. It was the same thing, just, like, fully disappointment in the movie. And it's weird because Panos Cosmatos has went off and done Mandy since, and Mandy's fucking incredible. And then I remember watching it, was it last year or the year before? And it finished and I was like, this is a masterpiece. And I don't, I really don't think anything has changed. Like, I don't feel like I went through, like, a near-death experience that would make me reevaluate life, or movies or anything. It just, for whatever reason, connected with me. But I remember feeling absolutely crushed at the end of that movie, the first viewing, just thinking, because everyone had told me up until it, you know, my viewing, like, the one guy that's going to love this movie is Duncan. You know, if there's one guy, one guy. And I went in, like, full, I was like, ready to give myself over, start a new church, the Church of the Black Rainbow, you know, the full thing. And it was just, like, for lack of a better word, shite. And yeah, I don't know, now I love it, but it's one of those things where you feel like, you feel dumb, like, that I'm not getting something that everyone else is getting.
Well, like, how I feel about, like, Mungo and the Witch.
No, I think it's too, you know, if you don't like something like that, though, Duncan, it's, and people think and suggest it to you because they think it's in your wheelhouse, that's one thing. But I think on your end, and I've been in this position as well, it's like, I hate to break it to you guys, but no, like, you want to like it, but now you have to explain, you know, why you don't, and that's just kind of a bummer all around.
Yeah, also there's that thing as well where, like, genuinely, if you don't like something, it's weird being, like, a horror podcaster as well.
Right, dude.
Like, you feel like you have to justify absolutely everything. Like, I don't like that. Well, why do you not like it? Well, you know, it just didn't gel with me. And then you get, like, 25 reasons from someone back, well, you like this movie, and it's similar to that, you like this movie, and you're like, yeah, but it just didn't fit with me, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like,
right.
It's disconnect. I don't know, I think there are movies where at times I went in wanting to love them, and just not like a recent one, and it's one that I actually fucking hated, for lack of a better word. Was that Terrifier movie that everyone...
Oh,
the one with the clown?
Yeah, I hated it.
I saw the, like, it was all over the internet. Art the Clown's going to be your new boy. You know what I mean? Right. Like, hang out with him at convent. Like, everything. Art was absolutely everywhere, and I got excited. I was like, you know, because I'm not the biggest slasher fan in the world, but I do kind of love when something breaks the pop culture, like, people start, you know, knowing about it and all the rest. And I do like those things. And I sat down and watched it, and it was just. It was a movie with one interesting shot, and the rest of it just didn't work for me at all. And everyone was... But then, I'm thinking, you've opened the door now. You've opened the hate door. Tusk. I hate Tusk.
Oh.
I hate Tusk.
It's
I know. And it's A24, and A24's the studio that put it, and I pretty much adore everything that A24's put out. It's Kevin Smith, who I grew up watching. I fucking loved Kevin Smith when I was younger. Granted, he's went a bit off the rails in recent times. Fucking love Kevin Smith. Justin Long, I love him as an actor. Michael Parks, I was like, on paper. paper. And that movie finished, and if I could have spat in Smith's face, I would have.
Well, Duncan, I say this all the time. There is a scene between Johnny Depp and Michael Parks, and I'm so excited for this scene, and then that's what we got.
Yeah.
It's just the most ridiculous, and I did not know that was A24, and that's got to be the biggest reach for A24, just because that's, hey, Kevin Smith is making a horror movie, and that's what that is, but that does not reflect A24 as a brand at all.
Well, speaking of have A24. Duncan, did you see the latest news that they're doing an adaptation of somewhat, it's called The Bride, with Scarlett Johansson? She's going to be the Bride of Frankenstein.
Ooh.
A24 is doing it.
Yes. Yes, and I couldn't be any more excited, because you have A24 releasing Tusk that I don't like. Their previous connection with Scarlett Johansson through Under the Skin, which is maybe one of my favourite horror movies ever made.
I need to see that.
It's incredible.
I mean, there's a couple of things that help it out. One, it's set in Glasgow. It's set about 20 minutes drive from where I live.
That's dope.
So I know quite a lot of the locations. Plus, it has Scottish people speaking like Scottish people. In movies, Scottish people don't speak like Scottish people. They speak like if you ever listen to Dougray Scott or Gerard Butler, that's not how Scottish people talk. It's not at all. Weirdly, if you listen to someone like James McAvoy in an interview, that's closer to how Scottish people talk. And it's like she's dealing with people on the lower end of society in Glasgow, which is even harder to understand. And I struggle, because they have a very kind of unique sounding accent, a very thick Glaswegian accent, and they capture that brilliant. And most of it is because they just had her driving around in a disguise, picking up people and just filming them in journeys, not being fully aware that they were being filmed until afterwards. Right. So it's like kind of guerrilla filmmaking. Yeah. And how they managed to build all the rest of that movie around it is just is mind-blowing. So the fact that they're going to do that with her, and it's going to be doing The Bride of Frankenstein, and I think Scarlett Johansson is a fucking incredible actress anyway. I think she maybe not unfairly, occasionally flexes her muscles and wants to do a more action-based role, of which she's brilliant at, but I think she shines when she does the more dramatic stuff, and that goes all the way back to something like Lost in Translation, which she's fucking incredible at. Absolutely. So I don't know if I've given you about 10, but Tusk from a while ago, Terrifier did not heed that movie. And the one that I kind of went 180 on was Beyond the Black Rainbow, which I did not like at first and now kind of love. So
Duncan, can I just pay you an hourly wage to just converse with me all day about the movies? Whatever your job is, I'll double it.
Well, and now we're going to get to the dumbest question, but yeah, we have to ask everybody. We do a fuck one, kill one, marry one here at mm-hmm. Cut to the Chase, Duncan, and you are no exception. Mm-hmm. So are you ready for your three?
Yep.
Okay. You have fuck one, kill one, marry one. Lori from H2O. Lori from Halloween Resurrection and Lori from Halloween 2018. Wow. I think this is my favorite.
This is
Fuck one, kill one, marry one. I was gonna do 1978, but I thought, she's only 17.
Right.
I think everybody would probably choose that one anyways. So I'm just gonna eliminate that from you.
So
yeah,
you
I'm
got all
everybody.
The other shitty ones. Yeah.
So I've got H2O, Resurrection, and this one here. There's a whole lot of crazy in this, isn't there, really? So if we're being practical and sensible, you want to fuck Laurie in Resurrection because she's crazy. That's good. That's a good sex, you know what I mean? If you want to lock them into a relationship, you want the adjusted alcoholic teacher because she's probably going to forget where you were the night before and not ask too many questions. She's carrying baggage, which is going to be focusing down on that. To me, long marriage out of that one, so that one's the marriage. And kill, sadly, is probably, although she'd be near impossible to kill because she's a fucking Terminator in this movie. Laurie and Halloween 2018 would be the kill, although, like I say, good luck doing that. So
actually, that was not the answers I thought you were gonna pick at all.
Right.
I totally thought you were gonna fuck H2O.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you would have killed Resurrection because obviously, she dies in Resurrection.
That's a sensible way to go with
and
that.
And then I thought you would have married the one because she could protect you.
If you're going for the one night stand, you go for the craziest girl you can get.
Duncan's like,
that's what it's about, memories. You don't want to play.
Like, why can't I get True Lies, Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah, I was about to say, if we're just going like our A Fish Called Wanda, Jamie Lee Curtis, dear God Almighty.
A Terror Train.
Yeah, like there's so many options here. I got
so many different ones.
I got Resurrection, where she's got a teddy bear filled with pills. Pills bear.
All right, guys. That's a great segue into we are finishing out this franchise, and I could not think of a better person to help us finish out this with than Duncan.
Yeah, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, happy Halloween, because this show will be dropping on Halloween night.
Happy Halloween!
Yes.
So, Duncan, did you see this in the theater when it came out? Like, I need to know a little bit of your backstory with your relationship with Halloween franchise. Ooh,
this is a good one, because this is where you instantly regret bringing me on the show.
No, I know a little, but go ahead.
So, yeah, I saw this 3 times in the cinema. So I saw opening night with the wife, then went with a group of friends the following night, and then about 2 weeks later went with a different group of friends who were like, there's nothing out, scary at all, and I was like, the fucking Halloween's out. I mean, come on, it's in the name. So I saw it 3 times in the cinema and had wildly different opinions from my first viewing to my third viewing. In my first viewing, I came out a bit more critical than I was on my third viewing, when I just kind of let myself absorb the movie and just... My problem, I have a kind of love-hate relationship with the Halloween franchise, in that I only really like a small amount. The original, obviously. The second one, even though, it's a bit silly in parts. I do really like that. The third one, which is a movie that, much like most of the internet, I've grown to adore. And then I can pretty much leave everything after that until we swing into this one here. And it's various shades of dislike to like. I don't like 4. I don't like 5. I really don't like 6. Resurrection, you're going to hate me here. Resurrection is not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but if you've had a few beers, that movie is fucking legendary. Like,
exactly.
Busta Rhymes just walking about the place, whoa! You know what I mean? I'm down to clown with that, you know what I mean?
Yes.
H2O, I liked it when it came out. I've just never liked it as much as I did on that first viewing. The Rob Zombie ones, I have tried. Trust me, I have tried. I've tried different versions of it. Yeah. I have, you know, on both of those movies, and I always come back to the kind of feeling that Rob Zombie doesn't understand what makes a Halloween movie, and as a result puts himself into that, which is what a director is supposed to do. It's just I don't necessarily gel with that. And then, obviously, we brought him back here. And like I say, I saw the first one, I was very critical of it. And by the time I got to the third viewing, I was like, just take it as a movie.
Right.
What it is.
Right.
I found I enjoyed it a lot more and let a lot more slide in it. Although, I will have a comment about the very end of the movie when we get to it. Which, yes. I'd like, the more I think about it now, the more it makes me laugh. And it has the wrong effect. I shouldn't be laughing at the end of that movie. But I can't help it.
Now, see, Duncan, I had the adverse reaction. When I seen this movie 2 years ago, when I came out of the theater, I was like, that's a fucking 5. Like, I was so happy. And then, the more I started to talk about it, and then the more I rewatched it, it's gone down.
Right.
Yeah, so you did exactly. So I was, when I was in the, my problem is I can't, I'm always like, especially in franchise stuff, like, I can't just go in and just let a movie wash over me. I hate it. I'd like, unless it's a movie that's not involved with a franchise or I know very little about.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Halloween one, the fact that we'd had so much press about it, and, you know, this was going to be a direct continuation to, you know, the second movie, and we were going to we're going to basically boost right in and do like all this stuff. It's going to be this like movie that was going to tie up loose ends, was going to bring things back, you know, and all the goodwills and graces that went with it. So when I went in, I was like, I was kind of predisposed to look for inconsistency from the start, which is the wrong way to go in on a first viewing of any movie. You should always go in, and I went in loaded, right, with this, and I sat down, and I was just like, well, that doesn't make sense, this doesn't add up, well, why would they do this? You know, like, characters' motivations didn't make sense, like, the full thing, and then I come out, and I was sitting about a three and a half, and then I went back to see it, like I say, the following night, and a couple of things, I was like, well, you know, it's different, it's a different time now, you know, it's different filmmakers, and at least they did this, and at least they brought back the idea of making Michael Myers terrifying. There's a particular scene at a garage in this that is maybe, out of all the Halloween movies, is maybe the one of the most just viciously upsetting like scenes ever. In a Halloween franchise, so I kind of let myself go. By the time I went in to see it the third time, I just kind of let myself go, right. And I trust me, I don't think grade wise at the end of this we're going to be too far away from each other, and I don't think we're going to disagree on, I'll be very surprised if we disagree on much. I think ultimately what it is by the third viewing I was just like, you know, this is it's a new entity, it's a new beast, this is what they're wanting to do with it, and you know, as egregious sidesteps go, was there a cult of thorn? No. So, I mean, as I think you should get you 2 stars straight away for that. they try to, where possible. The thing is, I don't think, and you probably talked about this before, I don't know how well Halloween plays well now with the new brand new audience. I think with the right climate where you're stuck in a cinema, no mobile phones, you know, not chatting to your friends or whatever, I think there are still things in it that would maybe not necessarily scare a kind of modern teenager, but I think would grab them. But I mean, it's a movie predicated on the fact that at the time nothing had come out like that.
Exactly.
So by the time you get to this one here, there has to be things which feel almost unbecoming of a Halloween movie, but they can have to be there because that's just what audiences want from a horror movie. So as a horror, I would like, see if someone had said to me, here's a lot of money, go away and make a Halloween movie, I would have handed them back the money, I would have shook their hand and I would have walked out the door without saying a word, because to me it's the Kobayashi Maru of like franchises. There's literally no win to doing a Halloween movie for any director at all, because if you get one thing right which appeases, I mean, the franchise is split down the middle, like the fans of the franchise can't agree on what incarnation of Michael Myers they actually like, whether or not a Halloween movie needs to have Michael Myers in it. We're all split, we're all fractious as it is, so trying to get mainstream appeal and that is just a fool's errand. And that's why I've kind of slowly grown to enjoy the Friday the 13th remake more, because once again, overtly critical of that. I'm not saying I love it, but I've come around to a bit more in that at least they just did a Friday the 13th. At least they had Jason running around in the woods.
Right.
I'm kind of happy with that. There's a whole lot of those Halloween movies where like Michael Myers is not necessarily running around the neighbourhood. Yep. You know, like killing people or stalking kids. No. It's just, that's your bread and butter. So
they definitely changed the formula in this one, as to where, you know, in all the other ones, it's like Michael Myers is almost hiding and then just waiting until, you know, somebody's isolated.
Yeah, stalking for long periods of time, like, it's not going to work today.
Yeah,
it's
and this
not.
One, it's like he's in broad daylight.
Right.
It's completely different than the other predecessor films.
And can I say, too, that, Duncan, I completely agree with you. And that's where I'm at with this movie as well, to where it was the opposite, actually, of everybody's here. Because we both felt the same way. We were really high on it, except for the fucking opener, which is atrocious. I can't. Yeah. This is one of the worst fucking openers of all
time.
It
is the worst opener in the entire franchise for me.
After that, we loved it. And then I think we saw it, what, twice or 3 times in the theater?
Twice.
Okay, so we saw it twice, and I loved it from the jump because, obviously, like, I'm excited that we're getting a new Halloween movie or whatever, but then I got more critical of it. I'm at the place now where I just like what they tried to do with it. I like their take on it. I like the fact that this is act one of three acts, and we know that going in, so that, you know...
I didn't know it going in.
No, and I love the fact that we get David Gordon Green, and hearing Danny McBride and him talk about it reminded me of like an Eli Roth, where they're talking about it is just infectious, and like you're just like, I'm down, like that sounds awesome, like give him a shot. And while I am very critical about this movie and a lot of parts just don't make sense and whatever, it's like you look at it in terms of the whole franchise. And it's really not that bad. At least these guys are fans and they're going about it and trying to you know, tie some things up, and at least they're going in their own direction. Yeah. And that's where I'm at with it. But I definitely am not critical of this.
it's not. I think the thing is, I think we all expect... It's weird because if you look back when Rob Zombie's Halloween came out... you know, it did really, really well. People were clearly enthralled about it. And over time, you know, it's kind of... there's still people I know that genuinely love it. It had almost, in some weird way, more good graces going into it.
Right.
Like, when this one came around, it was almost like people were like, well, you know, we've already been through this before. Do we need to go through it again? And I think... the choice of director was inspired. I really like David Gordon Green's stuff. I really like him as a combination with Danny McBride. And, you know, this was hot off the heels of Jordan Peele doing Get Out as well. So it was like this kind of... people can make this jump from doing comedy into horror, and we should give them the chance to do that. And it's all about timing. Like, that's like, comedy works based on timing, horror works based on timing. So that on a base level, they share similar DNA. And they're reactional movies. Like, a comedy movie is there to make you laugh, a horror movie is there to make you scared. Like, what's a drama there to do? You know what I mean? Like, right. What's the baseline reaction you want from it? Is it tears? Is it, you know, is it laughter? Is it joy? I don't know. Like, but they're, when you look at those genres, they're kind of locked in. So I would, all the goodwill for them. And I think they get a lot right in this movie. Like, in terms of the actual character of Michael Myers, they get a lot right. I also think they give us the opportunity to almost have that redemption with the Laurie character. That, like, Jamie Lee Curtis, there's a reason that she was like, I will do your movie if you kill me in it. Like, you know, when we get a resurrection, I will come back. You know what, I'll come back, but you don't even get a new headshot of me. You just have to superimpose my face from the previous movie on the fucking cover, because that's what you get. You get no more. But she's, like, they give her at least... as a movie, this has strong female characters, which I really enjoy. The slasher genre is kind of getting a bit lazy on again, and it was nice to see them bring back. I love the kind of generational thing there of, you know, her immediate daughter is the one that grew up with all that shit, so of course she's going to reject it, but her daughter feels closer to her grandmother because, you know, she's been kept away, and I love those elements, those details. But Michael Myers here isn't as unstoppable the machine as we've seen in other movies, and the stalking of characters is what really made me, like, that beautiful one shot of him going into the garage. It's just like, if you don't watch that and genuinely, as a horror fan, as someone that likes Michael Myers as a character, if you're not smiling when you see that,
oh my god,
it's the best shot of the entire franchise.
I will watch it on a loop.
It is literally the best shot of the entire franchise. Now, this obviously isn't my favorite movie out of the franchise, but that shot is the best out of the entire franchise.
Can we just please gush over this fucking for 5 minutes straight? No, but see, but that's the thing too. You got to know, as a Halloween fan and the history of it, like you said, Duncan, it's not the first person POV, so it's not like you don't see it, but you, it's like fucking GTA where you see behind him, over the shoulder, Michael Myers. Because we're not trying to hide the fact that he's Michael Myers. We all know that. So, yeah. And then the fact that it's a one-shot, too, which started the whole franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, obvious... my only criticism of it is it didn't go on longer. Yeah. I feel like they could have done it for 10 minutes straight, and it would have been one of the most epic shots ever. Just fucking murder people. House to house, trick or treat.
Yeah, I needed a little bit more.
Well, I
love it, but yeah, you wanted more. Like, that, we're fucked up people. That we just wanted to see more carnage.
Give me the whole movie like that. Just murking people. Like, I'm not going to kill the baby.
You know what I mean? That's, like, those elements are the elements that a lot of the series just forgot. Like, even, he suddenly appeared behind something. I mean, that's a technique, right? Once, I mean, you're in part, you're looking for things for him to pop him from, maybe.
Well, there was that scene in part 5 where he is sitting in the car when they come to get Tina.
Right.
And he's just, like, sitting there in his mask in the car.
But, like, Michael Myers don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? at this point, he's invincible. He can't die. You know what I mean? He'll just go into a year-long coma and wake up. But, like, those elements. And also, there's a detail that I really like about this one is the kind of ravage of age on the character. So he doesn't move like someone younger. He doesn't move like younger Michael Myers.
Right.
Like, you know, even his motions... There's a narrowness about it, and that works both ways. There are certain scenes later in the movie where I'm like, could a 7-year-old do this? Probably not. But at the same time, when I'm watching it, there's a, you know, even the way he walks feels. I mean, he's the original kind of slasher killer that does the deliberate slow walk that everyone has copied since, and I think it, you're coming back to that and seeing that. I mean, isn't that? I'm sure. And one of the Rob Zombie ones, if he doesn't run at a character, he moves very quickly towards a character. I'm like, that's just not Michael Myers. Michael Myers is like a ninja, you know what I mean? He's very slow, deliberate.
Like a ninja.
You know what I mean? That's what he does. And I think they got that well in here. I think they landed that like very, very, very well. So
I agree. I think they got Michael right in this.
You felt his size in it too.
Yeah.
Yes. Without it being like cartoonishly exaggerated.
Not like Tyler Mane.
Like the Rob Zombie Tyler Mane. Yeah.
Like
that saber tooth, that's like an animal. Like that dude is so big, it's like a bear. Like this.
We never saw his dad, but we did see his mum, and his mum wasn't that height, so. You know, we saw his sister. Like, his sister wasn't that at all. What the fuck is
going on? Neither of them were.
Come in there. Like, welcome to the insane asylum here. Here's some steroids and some growth hormone. Here's a DVD on how to learn Aikido. You know what I mean? Like, are they training a psychopathic killer in there? They try to subdue one.
Duncan, that was the first thing I did as a kid, is Aikido. They gave us swords. They were wooden swords. That was
perfect. Yeah, you know, they train it, like, they literally, he walks out of there, and, like, that's the thing. Remember everyone jokes about, like, in the first one, oh, Michael Myers just, like, he all of a sudden knows how to drive, so he's like Neo from The Matrix, I know how to drive, and he's away. But when you watch, like, when you watch Rob Zombie's one, he comes out, like, a no-pain feeling, driving, like, ultimate death machine killer. Which, like, from the moment he breaks out, he is that. And I just could never take to that. And this one, you know, we're getting the later day version of him. And the fact that he has those, like a lot of serial killers, he has that repressed thing that gets him off. And as a result, the kills that you see here, like, especially that very first one, is him almost, you know, for lack of a better term that doesn't sound horrendously graphic and sexual, that's him busting a nut, you know what I mean? That's him, like, you know what I mean? That's really it. It's the first sexual encounter after a few months away from the game, if you know what I mean. It's quick, it's messy, it's, you know, all over the place. It doesn't go quite according to plan, but he's having a good time. And then, you know, like, after that...
Are we talking about the bathroom?
Yeah. Every killer, yeah, like, where he's just, like, everything's everywhere. After that, you know, like after that kind of initial kill of him back being Michael, everything settles down at the more I'm Michael Myers thing. He repeats, right. starts repeating the patterns that he did beforehand, which to me is much more believable than, you know, he just comes out instantly.
Him on steroids.
Yeah, a one-man wrecking machine. He comes out like fucking Steven Seagal, you know, he just knows how to snap arm, twist it. People don't know, you don't learn that.
Right.
You're locked away from, I don't know, it's those sort of things. So I give it goodwill for that. There is, however, like a ton of egregious things that they do here. Specifically, like probably the biggest crime in this movie is, one, the podcasters at the start. Known, I don't know where that comes from. I don't know why that's a thing in there. Out with Blumhouse had a podcast at the time, and I wonder if maybe, or you know, the kids the kids listen to the true crime podcast these days. Let's date this movie horribly by putting that in. You know what I mean, there's like, that's like, and I don't, that's all I listen to is true crime. But you know, they use that as an element to somehow trigger Michael to do something. I don't like that as a setup. I don't like the doctor in this one, and he's anti inverse Loomis thing.
Yeah. When he puts on that mask, when he puts on the Michael mask, like when he has like one arm and takes out the other cop, I had from first viewing, even though I gave it a 5, like I don't know why, just based off of this scene alone, but I think it like quickly redeemed itself as soon as he got like American History X curbed off.
Oh, dude, yeah, right.
It quickly redeemed itself. But I literally, when he put that fucking mask on, I'm like, for fuck's sake.
Well,
you know?
But it almost is symbolic in a sense, because he smashed his fucking head. Because he smashed the head of that whole plot. That whole plot of him trying to put Michael with Warren, and that goes against, I mean, listen, Resurrection, say whatever you want, but Busta had it right when he said Michael Myers is a killer shark. He is that scene that we just talked about with him going trick-or-treating house to house, that's Michael Myers. He doesn't give a fuck about
but
Warren.
They make you, because of all of these previous installments, they make you think she,
that's the
but,
thing,
but they also try to incorporate that in here, like with the speech that I said at the beginning of this episode.
Yep.
She's like, he's been waiting for me, I've been waiting for him,
like,
which is kind of funny that it's a different take, because you know, we don't get the brother-sister angle in this one.
Right.
And it is just Michael is just a man that, you know, killed babysitters.
And it's almost playing with the audience, with us knowing that, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because
But she's more obsessed with him at this point.
Exactly. And Michael doesn't give a fuck. I don't care if Sartain's trying to, you know, do a little fucking hookup date between you. I want to see him in his natural environment.
Yeah, Michael just doesn't care. I mean, he killed a kid in this one.
Yeah.
That's been a big topic of a conversation, because obviously he didn't kill the baby, but he did kill like a 10-year-old kid.
I think the kid, because he had a gun and he was a threat, you're dead.
Yeah, but this is the first film where, like, I mean, yeah, he's chasing after Jamie in the other films, but like he's never actually killed a kid.
The entire segment in the house as well with the babysitters and the kind of way that he is back to being like a stalker killer thing, please totally back into, like we said before, the Michael Myers that we've known about. And he does break some of the kind of the canon rules we've set out, specifically the killing of the kid. I think you're trying to continue the story on and he's been locked up. I don't understand the need out with, well, it's, you know, we don't have Donald Pleasance anymore, so we need a Loomis-esque character. You really don't at this stage. It's fine without it, especially when you've got your Loomis in this movie is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
She's the one that is determined to take him down at all costs. She believes that, you know, in part she's responsible for, you know, because if she just finished the job on that night, we wouldn't have to go through this. And I think there's a lot of that. Jamie Lee Curtis has had to play this character different ways, different times, and you can tell that she's invested in this one, because this is the one that makes most sense to her. And it is true, some people allow some people that have been victims allow themselves to be controlled in both outcomes here are negatives, by the way, just in case, but allow themselves to be controlled by complete fear to the point that it cripples them
to live
yeah, cripples them to live. And then other people double down on it and constantly feel that they need to be prepared for it happening again. Neither one of those situations are great because they ultimately will alienate everyone, which they do in this situation. And she falls into that latter camp. But she... I love the fact that, you know, there's like small details, like that daughter grew up in the worst house ever, clearly. But at the end of the day, the life lessons her mum taught her are one of the big reasons that that family walk out at the end of this movie. And
see, that's one of my biggest gripes with the movie, though, Duncan, is the fact that it foreshadowed it. Like, it even gives you, like, a clip
of... We got flashbacks of
you got flashbacks of her. Like, it bugged the shit out of me because it's literally showing she's like, the basement, you know? Like, okay, so obviously... And that's the slowest moving counter in the history of moving counters. It is, but I'm sorry. Like, it foreshadowed the whole ending of that movie. Yeah.
She had her fucking initials carved in it.
Obviously, we know it's not a cage, it's a trap. But I really, like, I just didn't appreciate her character either in it because, like, she's such a bitch to Lori the entire time.
And then
finally, at the end, she's like, oh, he was real.
Oops, sorry, Mom, you were fucking totally right.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say, and I'm with you, I overall don't like... The kind of setup of that. I appreciate that it does pay off. I don't appreciate the flashback, but we now live in a post-Saw world where, like, if a character does anything, we need a flashback to explain how they learned how to do that.
Yeah, but they could have did that at the end of the movie
Anecdotally, they could have done it anecdotally at the start where, you know, like Jamie Lee Curtis when she's being interviewed by the podcasters, who, you know, my version, they don't exist, but, you know, like, she could have been getting interviewed by them and say, listen, this destroyed my life, it ruined the what I put my daughter through. I put her through like 6 years of weapons training in hell, you know, survivalism and all that. She could have mentioned that, and then at the end we wouldn't need to see it. But in terms of the context of a potential trilogy for this movie, I want to think that that's, you know, the shittiness of her in that first movie is going to be paid off in the second movie, and I hope they do that, because if she's still just a shitty ratbag character in the, you know, in the second movie, I'm going to be booing loudly in the cinema, because we've got over that. She now understands. She now has come to grips with things, very much like Laurie is in Halloween, where she, you know, there is no boogeyman, and at the end there is a boogeyman, you know what I mean? Like, because he tried to kill me. It's a bit more clumsily handled here, if I'm being honest. That's because John Carpenter's not directing it, so, you know, it doesn't have that Carpenter masterclass. But there are elements there that I think are interesting. I just don't think it works. Or, like, the kill house with when it becomes Cube. You know what I mean? We're still like, fucking rooms. And this is the flame room. And this is the room with the spike of death. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, I don't, that to me felt a bit like, you know, I built my house to be your trap on the off chance that it got out. Like, I know how, like, we spoke just earlier on about how, like, I got drunk and got lost in the woods. I will be fucked if I get drunk, come stumbling at my house, pull the wrong lever, and end up in the room of fire because of the pissed. You know what I mean? How the fuck did it? You know, it's just all that sort of stuff became a bit of a...
The counter would move so slow that you'd be like, I forgot by then.
Before that counter would be open.
Yeah. The thing I was going to say about the ending of this movie is, and it's not supposed to be funny, but it does make me laugh more and more when I think about it. It's not a great ending. One, the fact that he openly just allows himself to be quote unquote burned.
He's looking up at him.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm not dead. I'm just very badly burned. He's like in the bottom there. But you watch the credits. The post credit scene is him breathing, but it sounds like I'm sighing. Kind of sounds like I'm going, because he's we've got another two of these and I'm badly burned again, and we know how that went the last time. Can I just get a sequel where I'm not fucking horrifically third degree burned? Is that possible? Well, I always have to be burned.
Duncan, Now, we live in a world where, you know, I don't know if you saw it. Did you see the scene from the next movie that kind of, or the reason as to how Michael escaped?
I have not. Okay. I am expecting it to be, like, if it's anything better than what is going in my head just now, then I will be overjoyed. Because I have, at this stage, they could just not explain it, and everything would be fine. You know what I mean? It could have been a dream, and everything would be that's just how things are. They don't care in this franchise about consistency between movies, so...
Right. I will say, though, without spoiling it, it is really good, because I feel like it's topical, and it definitely says something about what I think they're going to maybe possibly try and say in the next movie. But yeah, it's very interesting, I'll say that. So yeah. At least, again, I have faith that they're trying to go somewhere and they're trying to say certain things without beating you over the head. I mean, it is, you know, Danny McBride and the dude who made Pineapple Express. But they are very good at putting in things about Michael Myers that necessarily haven't been explored yet.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. So you obviously haven't seen the teaser for Halloween Kills, but did you see the trailer for this one prior to seeing the film, Duncan?
I did, yeah. This is, like, I'm not a... And I don't want to give it the opinion that I don't check out trailers. I've just not got around to that one yet. I love trailers, right? I know the internet hates trailers, right? I fucking love trailers. There is nothing that makes me more excited to go and see a film than a trailer, right? And even when the trailer doesn't necessarily always accurately represent it, and then there are the people that moan that trailers give away too much, not like they did in the old days, and my counter to that is, go back and watch the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre trailer, where they explain in the trailer everything that's going to happen, and I think they even show the big kill and with the door opening with leather.
Right.
They show like fucking everything. Everything is in that trailer.
They kind of did it with this one with Virginia Gardner's kill. You know, which I think was probably because I think that was probably going to be the scariest kill. Let's talk about kills in this real quick before, you know, I think one of the biggest injustices in this whole movie is that too many unlikable characters didn't die. So I think that's why two of the most likable characters died, Dave and Vicky. So, but I think that's why the next film was titled Halloween Kills. So because of the trailer because of the trailer with him in the closet, which probably I think would have been really scary had they not implemented that into the trailer.
That kill.
Yeah, had you not. So
is that on us? Fucking showing that.
I mean, they should. I mean, it is a scary scene, and it pumped us up to see it. But obviously, you know who's gonna get it.
Yeah.
But I think one of the underrated kills in this, honestly, is the fat kid in the field, and with the motion detectors. I didn't like it the first time I seen it, but when I rewatched it earlier, I really dug it because the motion detector goes off, and then it goes on, and he's even closer.
Right.
And then it goes off, and you just hear like the slice of like him cutting him. And, you know, like, obviously he's fat, so he can't really run, and, like, his little cape gets caught on the thing. Yeah, I mean, and clearly it didn't take much of a stab to kill him. And I think that was my initial problem, was it just took one little stab there.
Right.
But I really like that kill. I like the motion detectors.
And I hated
the sound design in this movie is fucking brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. See, if you have, like, pretty shoddy sound work on that scene, not nearly as effective with a light coming. We've seen that done before, but you're right, when that light goes out and you hear that slice and it sounds sore, you know, you wince a little bit when you watch it, and like those things, I had never actually thought of it from the perspective of likable and unlikable characters dying, but you're right, the ratio of likable characters getting knocked off here is abnormally high.
Like, why the fuck did Cameron not die in this one?
Yeah, right. That's a good question.
I mean, obviously, because he's definitely getting... I mean, Now, he cheated on her. He threw her phone and like some nacho cheese.
Now,
whatever
Dave,
that was.
While he was revving the engine, which was a dick move, I liked it.
I liked Dave too.
You know,
with Alakazam.
Yeah, and can we just say too, real quick, that fucking kid? I'm just sitting here clipping my toenails. Like, that fucking kid is amazing.
Do you think he'll be back for Halloween Kills?
Yes, and yes, absolutely. And not only that, like, I love how the comedy in that scene was implemented. And it's tough because it is. It's a mix between that fucking kid cracking jokes and some serious shit going down. But at the same time, I feel like the scare and that and the tension kind of matched the comedy, if that makes sense.
I totally agree with that. That's what kids are like.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Like, kids are like that now. See kids in the 70s. See the kids in the original Halloween movie? They acted like suburban kids. That's how suburban kids were in the 70s. That right. little kid, exactly what kids are like now. Like,
when your friends smoke some weed.
I tried to.
Now, Pat, I actually had a question for you. I might have missed it each time, but it seems like in every film, like the old Myers plays that they're always referenced. Was it not referenced in this one?
I didn't see it.
No, yeah, they didn't go there.
It's literally referenced in every other Halloween film.
Well, we're going to be there by the end of this this three-movie arc, for sure.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's his new Death Star.
Yeah, that's...
And then one thing that Dan did point out as we're finishing up here is we didn't notice until today that, you know, the cops that were chilling outside when Judy Greer's old bald husband died.
Pumpkinhead.
Yeah, like, he was old bald. Why is nobody talking about that? Like...
Who was it?
Judy Greer's husband, Karen's husband.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Why does nobody talk about how fucking old he is compared to her?
Right.
He hung out with Lonnie.
There's a weird thing that doesn't surprise, like, she had a shitty mother, so her husband's a father.
She's like, I need a daddy.
Yeah, it's horrible to say, but, you know, I just, to me, that was just like, probably.
As a character, though, his only job was to mention the character Lonnie.
Yeah, which is which Cameron is his son, which right. I believe this one put together.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we're going to see more of that in the sequels. We're going to meet Bonnie soon.
But yeah, Michael had carved the cops that were outside, he carved their face like pumpkins.
And he put the lights in them and everything.
Yeah, I never noticed that
He's
before.
An artist.
Yep.
He's an artist. No, that's actually something that we've talked about on every single episode, Duncan. So we got to ask you, do you think Michael Myers is intelligent?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you why, and I think it's a specific kind of intelligence. Right. I don't think he's like intelligence as in like if you were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you'd be on your phone offense. You know what I mean?
Not if you win $1 million.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be phoned in here, but like we've got your friend here, Michael. He's got a question for you. You've got 60 seconds. It's about temporal physics. I don't think you'd be going to Michael Myers to answer that question. On the flip side, I think he has a kind of hunter prey intelligence, and that I think he naturally can anticipate how people will react in fear. Which you find out, what you do find, and what, because I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, would have loved that one with Laurie on it, but it just didn't happen. But you know, when it comes to psychology, a lot of serial killers are really good at one of the reasons that they get away with kills so long is they tend to very, very, very easily be able to pick out the most vulnerable people as targets. So there's like an instinct. It's maybe instinct more than intelligence, but I do think that he knows what he's doing in terms of how to disable a house, how to get in, who should take out first. You know, like, although he's not a stupid killer, but I don't know if that's necessarily instinct rather than necessarily intelligence. You could argue that trying to kill the same person over and over and over again is tantamount to insanity. You know, that idea of
dedication.
Yeah, like repeatedly. And the fact that he can never do it, and the fact that he repeats the same mistake over and over again, maybe reflects on the other. Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. In this movie, he comes across very much as a shark. Right. I don't know if sharks are necessarily intelligent, but they're very good at what they're doing. And he's very good at killing in this movie. And he knows how to stay out of it. He genuinely knows, and that's the thing. One of the reasons I love him in this one is, you know, in this movie he's credited as the Shape in the credits, and that's for the most part what he is. A lot of what he does is in the shadows, or when we follow him go into that house in that tracking shot, or when he's stalking someone. He's not doing it in broad daylight, you know, or he's not doing it completely visible to everyone where someone's looking at a window and he's like, hiya, and then they turn around and look back and he's disappeared, then he's in their house. He's making sure that when
he did go to the gas station and kill people in broad daylight. Like, he drove other mental patients there.
That's his first sexual experience in...
It's his carpool event.
Yeah, that's him getting out his system. And then get back to business.
Oh, all Duncan, right, Duncan, you just gave a side story that I did not. Now I'm not going to be able to get it out of my head. All right, should we get into ratings here, guys?
Yeah.
All right, what do you got, Duncan?
I come in 4 for this one. Like I say, it ranks overall in the franchise surprisingly high for me. It probably sits in about 4th. And the franchise, my favourites being 1, 3, 2, and then this. So it does rate relatively high, but I said, that's because I don't really have much love for them I don't really have that much love for the character after part 2. So this one got me back behind the character, and yes, it makes some horrible mistakes. We've catalogued them out here. But yes. for the most part, when this movie's on form, this is the terrifying version of Michael Myers I felt we should have always had in every sequel, but never really got. So,
yep.
So 1 out of 5, you gave it a 4. All right, Dan, what do you got?
So here's the thing about Duncan. I respect him as a podcaster so much. He's one of the most hardworking dudes out there. We also, though, agree on many of things. I've noticed that throughout the years. We are just, I mean, this dude is my brother, I feel like. So, literally everything that you said tonight, I'm not gonna lie, I've completely, totally agreed with, and that's why that reflects my rating as well. I rated a 4. Thank you so much for coming on, Duncan, because, like, you vocalize things that I know I personally couldn't. And you did it with eloquence. No, literally. Yes, this is why I wanted to save the best for last, for Halloween night. I want to fucking bring Duncan on. So yeah, I rated a 4, just like my man Duncan. That's where I'm at. Boom.
Well, I do come in lower than you guys.
I'm not by that much.
I mean, it was a 5 on first view, so I mean...
Okay.
But...
That's fair.
At one point, I think I took it down to a 2. I've actually gone up.
You were mad about... There was one night you were really mad about it.
Yeah, well, it was the Dr. Sartain thing.
That
and then,
Sartain's a
and then I just have to keep, and then I just have to keep reminding myself that it gets curb stomped.
Right. That's half a point of it.
Yes. So, you know, and there, like I said, there was a lot of the likable characters and like people that you weren't rooting for, that you just wanted Michael to take a knife to the fucking head.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not a big fan of off-screen kills, and you know, if you're gonna kill one of the most likable characters, as in Dave, and just tack him up onto a wall and don't see how that happens, you're really gonna piss me off.
Right.
And I'm still pissed off about it.
Yes.
I
blame you, baby.
Karen really annoyed me. Like, I don't like foreshadowing. Yeah, I mean, it was too much foreshadowing. If it was gonna foreshadow, it should have been then. The counter was way too slow.
Are you saying that Karen's a bit of a Karen in this movie?
Yes.
Karen is the ultimate.
That's where they got it. That's where this fucking saying fucking came from.
But this time, I'm for that opening, or for, I hate the opening as well, but I'll talk about a couple of things I do like here really quick. I did like, you know, the motion sensor kill.
Yep.
I didn't like it originally. I like it more now.
Yep.
I love that continuous shot, and the fact that it is, you know, the best shot in the entire franchise, I have to give it props to that. Stop it. Yeah. I do like Michael in this one a lot. I hate the use of the word grandmother. I still don't like that.
It still bothers me.
I do like the Vicky kill. You know, I'm up to a 3.5.
Right on.
Behind us. good.
Yeah.
It's went from a 5 to a 2 to a 3.5. Right, right. So who knows where it will fall. You know, and Halloween Kills can affect that rating as well.
Totally. Yes. And Halloween Ends. Maybe
this one is about 5th or 6th in rankings for me.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So. Yeah. We want to thank you so much for coming on, and we'll definitely have to have you back. Do you want to pimp your stuff and what you got coming out?
Yeah, whenever you guys want me back, it would be my pleasure. It's taken a long time to kind of sync everything up for this one, but I'm overjoyed that you got me on your Halloween episode as well. No pressure. Thanks very much for having me on. Anyone that wants to check out anything I do, the best place to do that is to go through my website, which is tputzcast.com, and that gives you links to all the pages, or just search podcast under the stairs and I shall appear, and not physically unless you pay for the ticket. just want to stress that he missold me, he promised me he was going to appear. I talk about a lot of stuff, so a lot of people agree with and are really interesting. Then there's so much niche stuff that people can't be bothered with, and I don't blame them. I'm surprised I do it myself. But it has been an immense pleasure coming on to chat not only this movie, which I think this might be out with my original review. It's the only other time I've discussed it, so
nice.
So it's nice to do that, but also great to finally get on Cut the Chase and catch up with my homeboy Dan, and obviously spend a bit of time with Lacey, which is always awesome.
Aww.
I fucking love you, brother, for real, man.
Yes, and for everyone, this closes out our Halloween franchise. Hopefully we do not end up like the male and female podcaster at the beginning of this film. And with that, we're out. Bye, everybody. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum 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 bum
bum bum bum bum bum bum
bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum